lying in public townhousing. Project their minds to sound. Land, land to the slaughter for sacrificial violence. Jane Chow, Cracky Council, Holy Molly, at the birth camp. Young friends fulfill the rules of the prophets. Us hitting, we curse with guns, crack holes, and fools with bots. Intoxicated thoughts with the sickness of our mind. Six, all these things jungle concrete.
Wake up, black people, wake up. All I'm gonna make them oppress me. Step on with that shit. Don't you say that the ghetto we are crying dear. We have to get up, stand up, turn back to the true trend. The more side everlasting.
I just help. Can't you me? I just help. Fire, I go chase them. I just help. Fire, I go on them. Fire, I go on them.
The mighty lions from Zion ignite flame of what I'm tossing fire, leaving Babylon crying, trying to escape this futile. Who child is country jungle is too wild. That's why we got more than two stars. To adapt in the situation is too sharp. And though the road is rocky, I'm ready to try the next mile to bring sight to the blind man and sound to the left child. We will survive in this country wilderness. Swimming through the waters of Babylon like a rebel fish. Jungle is specialist, predator and survivalist. Spitting heaven's fire from his lips. Burn the same driver.
Welcome, listeners.
It's the black people of America.
To time for an awakening. On Black Talk Radio Network, new media for the new millennia. This is a history and current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states, my people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge. But we as a people can turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states, wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom. With all that getting, get an understanding. Again, welcome to the program this evening with your host, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us to join the conversation this evening is 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live at several locations. You can go to timeforawakening.com. That's timeforawakening.com, which is the homepage, and listen to the live stream from that location. You can go to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com. That's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforawakening and listen to the live stream there. Or you can download TuneIn to any of your carry around devices. TuneIn is a free app. You can download TuneIn and in that TuneIn search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening radio program, you'll see the icon, and you can stream the program live, even into your car. It's Time for Awakening radio program with the live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. That's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Time for Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook. In that Facebook search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening radio program. There you always see interesting content being posted daily. And before you leave that page, do me a favor and hit that like button. That's Time for an Awakening radio program with the fan page on Facebook and Time for Awakening Media. Home base is there. Make that one of your favorites and put that in your address bar. That's timeforawakening.com. Timeforawakening.com will take you straight to Time for Awakening Media. There you'll see more interesting content. Blogs, podcasts of different programs that you can download, listen at later times, or even share with your friends. So again, make that one of your favorites. Put that in your address bar. That's timeforawakening.com. Timeforanawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. Tonight, Fridays is usually open forum Fridays, freestyle Fridays, as we might call it sometime. Tonight we're going to have a couple special guests join us, two dynamic new programs that's joining Time for Awakening Family. Brother Oshie will be joining us with the African Perspectives, which will be airing on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays on Time for Awakening from 11 to 1. And Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers, which will be airing Saturdays. I want to show that's 4 in the afternoon. Both of those hosts will be with us this evening and just billboarding their programs, and we'll be just kicking around some interesting topics of the day. And you can also join us in conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We'll be right back to get things started after a brief word from our sponsors.
Mr. Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Everybody is here.
You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening with your host, Brother Elliot. Sundays, 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit us up at Time for an Awakening @gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening, and here it is Friday evening here in the city of Philadelphia. It's a pretty warm Friday evening. I want to welcome in my co-host, Philadelphia activist and tour guide at the African American Museum here in Philadelphia at 7th and Arch. Brother Richard is with us. Brother Richard.
What's up? Yes, sir. How you doing, brother?
How you feel, sir?
I'm doing good, all things considered. I'm looking forward to now that Time for Awakening is expanding with such fine programming as the gentlemen that will be coming on, adding to our advocacy of Black people, which they've been doing all along, for us to be making the moves we need to be making in the, I always say, in the 22nd century.
Yeah, well, that's a part of the struggle, man. It's a lot of voices that need to be out here to rally our people, to get them busy, to do work. It's necessary now. It's been necessary, but moving forward, We need our people working, and there's something that we all can do. We can all be a part of this. We don't all have to do the same things, but we can all do something. And I'd like to say that Time for Awakening is a part of that rallying cry with the different voices out here and bringing different guests on the air that are doing things and not just talking. That's what's needed now, work to be done. And again, I want to welcome in two of our new hosts that will be debuting their programs probably in the first week in August. Brother Oshie. October, I'm sorry. Brother Oshie of African Perspectives, again, which will be airing on Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays. And Dr. William Rogers with Black Reality Think Tank. Both of those men are with us this evening. How are you, brothers?
Hey, Doc, how you doing? Brother Elliot, Brother Richard, how are you?
Oh, great. How is everyone?
Good, Brother Richard. How you doing, too? How you doing?
I'm great. I'm glad to have our voices co-mingling and creating synergy, you know, so that we can be greater than the individual parts.
Well, no doubt about it. No doubt.
Well, I kind of let the listening audience know, and you had been on before, Brother Oshie, about African Perspectives that will be airing on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays from 11 to 1. But give our listening audience a little taste of what they're going to be hearing on African Perspectives, and then I'll turn the floor over to Dr. Rogers.
Thank you, Brother Elliot. We're going to look at the issues that are affecting our people from an African-centered perspective. You know, our program is unapologetically African, and not just, you know, here in the States, but truly on the continent and throughout the diaspora. We're going to be talking about the problems that beseech our people and the causes of it, but also, too, what we can do about it, the things that we can do to help ourselves. And to become more cohesive, because the reality is, in order for us to get up out of this muck and mire that we're in, and we're in this situation globally, we need some functional unity. You know, we need some consensus on our situation. And other thing I would truly like to do is help end any confusion amongst our people. We must come together and say, this is who we are, and this is our direction. You know. I know here in America, it's the land of the individual. It perpetuates, as I used to work with kids back when I was in Milwaukee in the public schools, talking with young people, and I coached football, young people for many years, and I always told them America's about four things: individualism, materialism, greed, and violence. Individualism, what's in it for me? How can I get mine? How can I get over? You know? And then, of course, materialism, the latest cars, gadgets, clothes, and so forth. Greed. In fact, greed is so deep. There's that movie Wall Street with Michael Douglas as the character Gecko. He even says in that movie, he says, greed, for a lack of a better term, is good for America. There was a program. There was a game show program called Greed about, 10 or 15 years ago. Well, the whole idea was to build a pot, like me and you were building the pot together, and then I make a move on you to take the pot, you know. So just being greedy. And then, of course, violence. You know, America's Europeans are some of the most violent people on the planet when you look at what they have done historically and how they have taken people's land and basically eliminated people. And in fact, if you want to use the word genocide, they're the only people that I can think of that have really practiced genocide on this planet. When you look at what is now called Tasmania, and you look at the Caribbean, you know, I mean, the European Jews weren't, I mean, you can say that was a genocidal attempt, but they didn't practice, I mean, they didn't exercise genocide on them because there's a lot of European Jews, and they're controlling a lot. That's another subject. So, and you know, so when you look at those four dynamics, we'll deal with those. We'll talk about that, how we can get, how we can deal with that, and begin to move beyond that. You know, we got to purge ourselves of this this mindset that we're in, and just as you say in your opening, pose a new paradigm, a new idea for us as African people, something that we all can understand and agree upon for our very, not just survival, for our existence, and so we can begin to once again step back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people that we have been. You know, there was a time in history, I know that many people can't fathom or can't believe or can't imagine, that people came from far and wide to sit at our feet. We are the ones that gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science and math and architecture, music, writing, law, and religion. We're the ones that did it. But yet we have been made to be or perceived that we've done nothing, that we were running around the jungle with a rag up our butt and a bone through our nose, never having created anything of any significance or consequence. And nothing could be further from the truth. So, you know, we're going to continue to enlighten our people to make sure that we clearly understand who we are and what we're about. And that's what African Perspective. We're going to bring some good guests on and pose good topics. But more importantly, because we're going to be fortunate enough to have a broader audience, we'll get a lot of input, I hope, from our brothers and sisters throughout this country and elsewhere who will listen to the program and be willing to share information. So that's African Perspective. Every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. So, yeah.
Dr. Rogers, tell us a little bit of black. Tell the listening audience a little bit about Black Reality Think Tank.
Thank you so much, Brother Elliott. I am extremely pleased and happy to join this community and this network of people. I've been working with Brother Oshie now for about the last year on Blog Talk Radio, and I am happy to come over to this network. I had a chance, you know, when we first. Brother Oshie made the announcement that we were going to do the transfer. I looked at your website, and I looked at some of the previous programming that you had, and, I mean, it sits, fits right in like a glove. And so it, I knew that I was in the right I knew I was in the right community when I did that. And what I also did was, like I said, I did listen, and you've had some dynamic individuals on. So what I'm going to bring to the table, very similar to what Brother Oshie said, but as well as some of the things that you're already doing. The name, just the name of the network, Time for an Awakening, is clearly what the Black Reality Think Tank is about. I am a historian. I was trained as a historian. I taught at the University of Wisconsin, Milwaukee campus. For 23 years, I taught in what's called the Department of Africology. That was formerly the Department of African Studies. And I taught the history courses. I taught courses on the history of religion and things of that nature. I retired in 2014. And so I wanted to find some avenue that I could continue to pursue, you know, the teaching of history, the discussion of history, and the researching of history. And then Brother Oshie had offered me this opportunity to join him, along with another couple of people through his network. And as a result of that, we were able to do this program. And let me tell you, I've been very excited. We've had some wonderful, dynamic conversations. We come on Saturdays from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. And the conversations are usually with individuals, and then sometimes we'll just do a mono discussion, just my perspective on an issue that I think addresses our community. Basically, it's a historical format. You know, history, I'm like Malcolm, reward the discipline that rewards all discipline. Dr. John Henry Clark, that you introduced in the beginning of the program, talks about it as a clock, it's a compass that tells us where we are in time and place. And so those are the parameters in which I operate. And we've had some programs that have addressed a lot of historical factors, but are related to today. The whole idea is to connect history to the present. And the motto we have a theme and goals and objective of the Black Reality Think Tank, is to dissect the past, to look at the present, and then project a meaningful future. That's what we want to do. That's what we attempt to try to do every Saturday. Some of the discussions that we've looked at are things like the whole Garvey movement. We've raised the question, why didn't we follow Marcus Garvey? What happened? How did we drop that ball? And we've gone back and looked at Garvey, the movement himself, and looked at the principles and ideas. We did a discussion. Obviously, we have to discuss the whole concept of white nationalism, which we sometimes call white supremacy, and its ideas and how it has implemented itself through our culture and where it comes from, and you know how do we adjust ourselves so that we can move forward and not let that deter us at all. So we've done that. We did a wonderful program called Intellectual Warfare, borrowing from Dr. Jake Carruthers' book, Intellectual Warfare, where we looked at the clash of ideas sometimes and how that affects us. And what we wanted to bring out of that discussion is that there are blueprints already developed among our ancestors that told us how to move forward. And we don't necessarily have to invent a wheel. It's already there. We already have those ideas. And so we talked about, obviously, the work and the legacy of the great Booker T. Washington. We wanted to raise the question, looking at Booker T. Washington from another perspective. Often he's been called an Uncle Tom, but we wanted to raise the idea that maybe that might not be the way we need to understand him. Looking at the legacy of the great George Washington Carver, and you know, what is it that he was doing at Tuskegee and that whole Tuskegee machine, you know, how it worked. Also, we looked at people like Prince Hall back in the 1700s. Now, we were always affiliated Prince Hall with masonry, but that wasn't Prince Hall's major work. Prince Hall's work was to educate children in the city of Boston. And what he did is he grabbed the Masonic order to use as a mechanism to be able to develop independent schools for Black children in the city of Boston in the 1700s. So we went back historically and looked at that, and we raised that as an issue. But now is that one of the things that we are going to have to do is go back to educating our own children in our community. And we at the Black Reality Think Tank have posed the question of what we call Saturday schools, where children are sent to school on Saturday or through a program. You know, we kind of, you know, dress it up a little bit. We don't necessarily call it a school because we know how young people work. See that, but at least there's some gathering where we get together and can educate them about our own ways and our own life and behavior. So those are some of the things that we've done, and we've got some exciting things coming up. Matter of fact, one of the first shows that I want to do on Time for Awakening, a network, when we do come on, is we want to talk to a young educator, a young woman out of Texas, who is looking to start a Saturday school system in the city of Dallas. And we're going to interview her, and we're going to talk about it from the perspective of the great Carter G. Woodson's book, The Miseducation of the Negro. And we want to ask and raise the question, are children being miseducated? And if so, how and what do we need to do to correct that? And so we're looking forward to do that one. I also just met a sister who is about 80 years young, and she was one of the individuals that was in the Audubon Ballroom on the day that Malcolm X was killed, assassinated, and we want to bring her on and have her talk about that experience and give us her feelings about that experience. So those are some of the things that we want to do, Brother Elliot. And like I said, I'm just really excited to join you and obviously continue to work with my brother Oshi and Ulu when they come through, and so I'm really excited, very excited.
Hey, Elliot, they gonna make me lose my job.
Well, you know, I was gonna mention, you know, what you're talking about, Dr. Rogers is right down Richard's wheelhouse. I mean, that's what he lives to do. He's one of the tour guys there at the African American Museum here in Philadelphia.
Oh, wonderful.
And we talk about these things all the time in relation to our experience here and the history that we have in this country and what we need to do to change that dynamic. So the things that you're talking about is subject matter. I know Richard is chomping at the bit to get involved in the conversation.
That's what I say. And Brother Oshie is going to, you know, and helping us being able to shape this dialogue and inform us that we are, and I don't even know if I should say in my opinion, but you know, if we take our perspective from a historical perspective, we are African people, and therefore our perspective and our interchange in looking at the world, you know, that African worldview should be based off of maybe even more than continental Africans. And this is not to rank us, but just because of our historical experience and our experience in North America, we have to look at our long view and that we are part of a global experience and been a right. part of a global experience for a long time. So Brother Oshie, we're in having that dialogue with Dr. Booker, bringing that history, it really helps us shape that. What I like to say that 21st, 22nd century advocacy, as far as using this platform, because that's what they did in the 19th century with black newspapers. They were advocates. They weren't just articles or ads.
Exactly. Right. And I'm excited. I'm excited about the opportunity. To network and communicate and connect with a broader audience, right. and to share those kinds of and share that kind of information. You know, my good friend Dr. Marimba Ani, whose book Yorugu I consider the Bible. You know, her book Yorugu, which is a African-centered critique of European cultural thought and behavior, and here in the Atlanta area, she has been having spiritual warfare, raising up the spirit of Dr. John Henry Clark. Well, this past May, which she has, it is held in May, we recreated the 1920 UNIA convention held in New York by the Honorable Marcus Mosiah Garvey, which is mind-blowing to the extent that here this man brought over 25,000 of our people, 25,000 of our people to New York for about a month to hammer out a constitution and a framework and a guide for our people without Twitter, Facebook, MySpace, you name it, you know. And even telephone wasn't that prevalent, but what he had was what was called then the Negro World, and and that paper was recreated for the event called the African World, was the main vehicle to communicate with our people to guide them and give them the inspiration to come to New York and to organize on various levels locally. Because I know that Marcus Garvey, one of his disciples, of course, was Malcolm's father, mm-hmm. Earl Little. And right. in fact, he came to Milwaukee to organize. And when I go to Omaha, I was just in Omaha, Nebraska last month, and I early September, September 4th, and of course, every time I go to Omaha, which I have a good friend there, I always go to his birthplace. There's a marker there, but now there's a center there. It used to be a Jehovah's Witness church. Now there's a Malcolm X center there, and they really done some good work and putting some money into making it look real good, because at one time it was pathetic. It was sad, you know. And but anyway, you know, he came to Milwaukee to advocate and to help build the UNIA. And so Malcolm lived in Milwaukee for a very short time until he moved on to Michigan. Lansing, Michigan, to be exact. There's a marker there that I've seen, you know. So this is the kind of work that we're going to be talking about and the kind of work that we're going to be doing, you know, in front of our community, the things that we have done. Because if you don't know what you have done, then you don't believe that you can do, you know, you have no guide. Because once again, as I stated earlier, we've been trained to believe that we've never done nothing, and nothing could be further from the truth.
We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, we're going to open up the conversation, but we're going to be kind of featuring tonight two of the new hosts on Time for Awakening, Brother Ushi with African Perspectives, which will air Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, 11 to 1, and Dr. William Rogers from Black Reality Think Tank, which will air on Saturdays, 4 to 6. And you can join the conversation, too, by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We'll be back to kind of do a little roundtable with the guys, and you can join in the discussion. We'll be right back after this brief break.
Tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services if when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
What is in 1 million brothers and sisters who are tired of the same old rhetoric, the same old leaders, the same old ways of dealing with political and economic empowerment? If you realize that nobody's going to save black people but us, if you understand that no existing political party prioritizes the best interests of African Americans as a collective, if you believe that leadership is as leadership does, and this means that the best leaders for the black collective must come from the ranks of those who place and hold the best interests of black people foremost and uttermost, if you understand that black people must develop the mindset and the will to finance their own racial uplift organizational efforts, then get involved with 1 million conscious black voters and contributors. The movement is now. Go to www.iamoneofthemillion.com. That's www.iamoneofthemillion.com.
Hey, did y'all see the stuff I posted on my wall?
Nah, it didn't even show up in my news feed.
Man, I'm done with social media. All the injustice and brutality going around, and it's like they're trying to suppress our voice. We're trying to get the message out there, and you can't even share empowerment and what's going on around the country either.
Mm-mm. Nah, don't be dumb with social media, though. It's a tool, and there is a place where we have a voice. It's a Let's Buy Black 365 social network. You do anything you would on any other social network. Post pictures, videos, status updates, share resources and community news. But on Let's Buy Black 365, it's a platform for us and by us to tell our messages.
Whoa, that's like a digital underground railroad.
What's the name of that site again?
It's letsbuyblack365.com. Yeah, I heard about that. It's all about networking, and you get points, right? Yeah, the more you network, post, and share, the more points you get. Plus, you get points for posting pictures, sharing information, attending community events, and inviting others to network with you on the app.
Wow, that's all I need to know. I'm gonna go download that app right now.
Now, better yet, let me invite you so I can get some points. It's all about empowerment and solutions, y'all.
Yeah, that's what's up. I'm all in.
Let's do it. Let's share our stories.
Let's buy Black365.com.
Welcome back to time for an awakening, and we're in conversation this evening. Well, it's open forum Fridays, but we're in conversation with two special guests, new hosts on Time for Awakening, Dr. William Rogers and Brother Oshi. Dr. William Rogers will host Black Reality Think Tank, which is on, will be on Saturdays from 4 to 6, and Brother Oshi will be hosting African Perspectives, which will be on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, 11 to 1. Gentlemen, you know, we'll kind of go in open forum, bounce some issues around. One of the things that I always like to do, and especially when me and Richard are on and have open forum, or even when we have guests, is I try to tie in our historical relationship here with Europeans to what's happening now, because when we don't develop things for ourselves to move our people forward, we seem to be repeating history, almost like that movie Groundhog Day, where the guy wakes up and he's doing the same thing. He's in the same reality each day. We've almost been like in a Groundhog Day stage to a certain extent. If you look at her historical perspectives, almost 100 years ago to the day, you had an avowed racist, an overt racist sitting in the president's seat. Now, that doesn't discount any of the other whites that have been in office. They're all racist as far as I'm concerned. But some of them know how to play politics, and they disguise their racism. Like Johnson. Listen, Johnson was a Dixiecrat. He was a racist. Mm-hmm. Used the N-word more than Mark Furman, for example. But he played politics. He knew how to mask his racism, especially around integrationist blacks that thought that he was their friend. But Woodrow Wilson was a guy similar to the guy in office now that just spoke his mind, let everybody know that he was a racist bigot. Woodrow Wilson was the one that brought made that movie Birth of a Nation, brought it in there, did the screen. D.W. Griffin. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Brought in there, did the screening, gave it all types of accolades, greatest movie I ever saw, whatever. And that kind of, in conjunction with black troops coming home from World War One, led to that Red Summer when many of our ancestors was lynched. They got records of thousands of them, but I'm quite sure it was more that wasn't accounted for that was lynched, because it gave hands-off approach to the racism that was in this country. It gave an open door to Klan and other groups to basically do what they wanted to do, even though that mentality, like I said, was always there. But I wanted to talk about that from a historical perspective, because, and I want to do it by reading an article that Cynthia McKinney sent me. Now, she was a guest on the program a while ago. She's been a guest several times. But she always sends me stuff in emails. One time when she was on, she talked about her experiences when she was in Congress dealing with the Jewish lobby and what they did when she didn't want to sign an agreement to back any legislation that Israel pushed across the table. Because she said on our program that all black elected officials had to sign this agreement. And at the time, the first time she was on with us, we were on a terrestrial radio station. It was black elected officials in the city of Philadelphia. I'm talking about that sat in Congress that heard her say this. None of them denied it when she said that all of them have to sign this agreement. When she refused, they made sure that she got out of there, or they ran candidates to get her out. But she always sends me information. Now, she sent me this article that was in the Chicago Sun-Times on March 29th, 1990. It's in reference to the late Gus Savage. I want to read it because it's an historical perspective that we can put on this and bounce it around. Listen to me, gentlemen. I just want to read this article, share it with you. And then I'd like to kind of start the conversation off with it. It's from the Chicago Sun-Times again, March 29th, 1990. It's entitled Why Gus Savage Keeps Winning by Vernon Jarrett. It says, what makes a man like Gus Savage keep winning and winning? But why would black people want to keep a troublemaker like Gus in office when you can elect a highly educated young man, a healer like Mel Reynolds? How can you, meaning this columnist, tolerate this man's ranting and raving about racism when there are more tolerant, moderate voices in our community? The above represents a summary of the questions from whites directed to me ever since Representative Gus Savage was elected to Congress from the 2nd Congressional District. Savage keeps winning because he has two ingredients that many black voters miss in Chicago's moderate black leaders. I speak from experience of having participated in two campaigns to unseat Savage, who is in his fifth term. Here's what I've learned from direct contact with black voters. Savage's orations don't turn on that many people. They're with him because he's always had the guts to speak out, to express our outrage against common injustices, while moderate blacks, as defined by whites, remain silent. Gus may be strident, but he's not for sale. Even though black moderates also win elections, their silence and cooperation with known enemies of black political empowerment has been sickening. An example. In 1955, when a Mississippi mob lynched a teenager Chicagoan named Emmett Till, blacks throughout the nation demanded federal action. Yet Chicago's lone black congressman, William L. the Man Dawson, refused to utter, excuse me for turning the page, refused to utter one strong word of protest. Dawson, a moderate, was the late Mayor Richard J. Daley's black lieutenant. It was a little band of stand-up crusaders, including Gus Savage and the late union leader Willoughby Abner of the NAACP, who picketed Dawson. The Congress and the White House and later met with Vice President Richard Nixon. Dawson and Daley attempted to maintain silence by ordering hundreds of black precinct captains to take membership in the NAACP and control the future NAACP elections. For years, all prospective candidates for the presidency of the local NAACP had to vow not to criticize the Democratic machine. Years later, the Chicago Defender could describe black members of the city council as the Silent Six. And shortly before the election of Harold Washington, it was not uncommon to see black aldermen not only remain silent, but also vote against black interests. On November 30th, 1980, it was pathetic watching nine blacks vote for a racist ward map concocted by Mayor Jane Byrne and Alderman Edward Volchak of the 10th Ward. The actual notion to accept the map was made by a moderate black alderman and committeeman named Wilson Frosch, who was a machine sponsor of Mel Reynolds. At the same time, blacks are continuously presented a Democratic Party of candidates who are out to curtail black political empowerment. If we are asked to ignore all the faults of our enemies and phony friends, why can't we do the same for an old friend who we know we can trust? Said a Savage supporter to me. Now, that was an article that Cynthia McKinney sent me. In reference to politics now, she always sending me stuff so I can kind of look in perspective. Now, you see the names here of a lot of these people are deceased now, but the mindset is still here. It's still prevalent, and it's still an enemy of the black community. The reason I'm saying this, and it's in reference to a comment that Dr. Rogers made when he was talking about Marcus Garvey movement in perspective. When we look back, we see a lot of things that can be talked about in derailing the movement. But one of the major glaring things, and I forget his name, and one of you men, Richard, Dr. Rogers, or even Brother Oshie, can probably bring up his name. But one of the major things that I seen was the first black man that was ever in the Secret Service, or in the FBI, that was hired by J. Edgar Hoover. He infiltrated the organization and basically tore it apart. Mm-hmm. That same mentality, especially now among black elected officials, is still here and is dangerous. When we were on the plantation, you had what we termed house Negroes. That was dangerous to the people on the plantation. But the only thing, we were all there together. So it wasn't much harm they could do. They could do harm, but it was to a certain extent because we were all there together. Now it's a little different. These people are really dangerous and can curtail movements, have gotten black leaders killed, have done damage to generations to come. Talk about these things in perspective in relation to Garvey and even in relation to the letter that Cynthia McKinney sent me. I'd like to hear you men's opinions, Brother Richard, Brother Oshie, and Dr. Rogers. Anybody can chime in first, and we'll just go from there. But to talk about it in relation to our struggle here.
Well, who wants to go first?
Go ahead. I'd like to hear y'all view.
Well,
if you want to go first, you can.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Rogers. As you were reading that, and I'm reflecting on that time, because I remember that, and I remember Gus Savage, and I think that we pray for acceptance in this system, and this is an evil system. It's a system not designed for us as African people to function in properly. It's a system where a few of us will do well at the expense of the many, and the few of us who do well are well rewarded by those who are in control. Once again, as I said earlier, America is about individualism, materialism, greed, and violence. And so we pray and hope that somehow, some way, that the Caucasian will eventually have an epiphany and will understand what he has done to us and will either give us reparations or allow us to come in whole as a whole. It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. You mentioned Woodrow Wilson and inviting in D.W. Griffin to have a showing of the Birth of a Nation movie, which glorifies the Klan. And then, of course, as you said, a few years later in 1919, it was a red hot summer of many insurrections, of many disturbances and resistance that we had against overt violence from Caucasians. And now you see the same thing happening. It is not going to change. But we have some of our people who believe that what they can do is somehow influence Caucasians to better their position. To better their position, whether it's in politics, in community, or whatever, at the expense of our people. Our condition, and I mean this, our condition as a people is worse today than it was 100 years ago, simply because 100 years ago, we had to rely on each other. We had to support one another. Black Wall Street rose up in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Rosewood, Elaine, Arkansas, and of course later the Raleigh-Durham community. But today, there is no place in this country today where we have a community that is solely run by us and self-contained, that everything in that community, the stores, the schools, the businesses, the banks, are run by us. Because we've always had, and the Caucasians here in America, in the enslavement process in America, was different than in the Caribbean and in South America. This was the most dehumanizing enslavement process. Also, too, of course, you remember, what's that, Dr. Rogers, mandatory manumission. So there was a reward for you turning in your brother, a reward for you. In fact, I heard about a thing that it was a situation, I can't remember, some small town where a brother did that, and they have a plaque. They have a plaque in that town, you know, honoring that brother for doing what he did. I think he might have turned in some brothers who were planning a revolt, planning some resistance to the oppression that they were experiencing. See, so you know, in this kind of environment, and it is getting worse. It is very hard for us to come together and with any kind of functional unity at this time. I don't believe it'll never happen, because I'm optimistic that it will. But at this time, because there's still a lot of us who hope and pray and wish and march and boycott all these things to try to make these Caucasians understand our situation and do right by us. It hasn't happened. It ain't happening now, and it ain't gonna happen.
Dr. Rogers?
Okay. I think the way that I have often looked at this and responded to the idea that, you know, you're proposing and looking at that letter is to understand that the Africans sojourn on the continent of North America from day one is one of a system of captivity. We were brought here out of a warlike system. We were captured. Africa was invaded by European Arab nations. They captured the people, and they brought them to North America and placed them in a system called plantations. And what happened on those plantations was a political system that was developed to govern those captives. Just like you do if you went to Sing Sing, Cook County Correctional, Shawshank, wherever. There is a system. The moment you walk into that gate and that gate clanks, there is a captivity system that has to be obeyed. What happened is, in order to motivate sometimes and to get people moving, we were often told that one day you're going to be free, one day you're going to have your own opportunities to do for yourself, so hold on. Well, that wasn't going to happen, and that didn't happen. The only holding on that you would do is obviously holding on in a way of being a captive and just trying to survive. It was a survival system. There was no such thing as freedom. So the plantation system never died. Today in 2017, we are still living under the politics of a plantation. And we are living where you have
people that are placed over you, institutions that are built around you, all in a way that governs and is used to build the English colony. America is English. We speak English. We speak a German tongue. We are taught a German educational system. We live socially and politically under that. And our ancestors who were brought here closer to that time, going back into the Garvey, the late 18th century, 19th century, understood that, believe it or not. When W.E.B. Du Bois wrote that sociological study called The Philadelphia Negro, and he did a complete analysis of that community and the whole evidence of that. He used that in the same context that you would in analyzing a plantation. What happens on a plantation? And where you're going to live? What you're going to do? Who you're going to be with? Who you're not going to be with? How you're going to move on a day-to-day basis? All of that that was done from the time we came here up until today is the same system in place. And at any point, we as African people, you know, have to face that that lifestyle. We have to face that. The problem is that we think or have thought that we got out of it, that we were free, and that we can go on now. I'm an American. I can do what I want to do. I got rights and liberties. I got an amendment, 14th Amendment. I got a 15th Amendment. I got a this amendment. You know, I have rights. I got a civil rights bill. I got a voting rights bill for me. I can do whatever I want to do now. I got the same rights as everybody else got. The Dred Scott decision stated it verbatim. Dred Scott said that there is nothing that a black man does that a white man has to honor. That never, ever ended. Obviously, Dred Scott was overruled in some other cases when they passed the 13th Amendment. But that's not a clear. That wasn't a clear ending. That wasn't a clear, abrupt closing. We know that the 13th Amendment did not free slavery, did not end slavery. We know that the 14th Amendment did not establish citizenship, nor did the 15th Amendment give you the right to vote. You have no amendment because you're on the plantation. Now, I know that's a nihilistic way of looking at it. I know that there's a that range hope, but you've got to understand it. That's what Garvey understood. And that's why he said, I don't ever think, just like Brother Oshie said, that Africans living in America are going to be able to have access to this system like you see other European Americans have. That's not going to happen. Police officer can walk up to you, do whatever he wants to do, shoot you, lock you up, you know, you try to fight it. Dred Scott kicks in. It may not kick in on paper, but it kicks in spirit.
Okay.
When that judge sits behind that bench and looks out into that floor at that police officer on one side of the room and the victims on the other, Dred Scott is at work. And I think that's what we are seeing every day. Adam Clayton Powell, when he became the congressman, went to New York. You know, he felt great about his election, and he was going to represent the state of New York. They gave that man pure living hell. Complete living hell. And we know that whole history of power. And then right on down the line to other congressional figures. What they did to the Obama family is ridiculous. Ridiculous. And we still somehow or the other are holding on to that hope that we are free and are going to be free in America. Oh, yeah, there have been gains. We made some, you know, you've made some lateral gains, you know, but it's kind of like the old saying about, you know, if the you hold it, you're on the dog's tail, so if the dog's moving, then you're going to move too. You know, but you're holding on to the tail. So obviously, if the dog's moving and progressing, you got no choice but to move and progress because you're holding on to the dog's tail. My point then is our ancestors understood that. They knew when Paul Cuffee, and even again, I mentioned earlier Prince Hall, and I really think that people have not done a real good historical analysis of Prince Hall because he got tied into the Masonic thing, and that's true. That's it. And I don't want to take it away from that. But Prince Hall was involved in the manumission. He was involved in the whole idea of going back to Africa.
Yeah.
So if we go back and look at a real thorough history of the Prince Hall era and all of those guys that were operating out of that time, Paul Cuffee, and right on into the 1800s, when you know some of the other African ancestors, their idea was to get the hell out of here.
Yes. Richard, Dr. Rogers is saying that our people are still operating. Well, Europeans put forth a plantation system dealing with us, and Dr. Rogers is saying our people are still operating out of that plantation system. Talk about it from your perspective, Brother Richard. I know that you are kindred spirit to what Dr. Rogers is saying.
And Brother O.C. too. But I would like to ask that we, my perspective is to broaden it, as we say, using our own political historical center. Because I don't think that we should give up that we're old people. Maybe, you know, and that our resistance movement is old from any incursions. And now those of us in North America, and now even around the African world, and throughout the diaspora, has accepted that we're so old that we connect our historical analysis to Kemet, Egypt, and all those battles to maintain our agency, our center. And hopefully that's clear. Because I think Chancellor Williams, when he's dealing with the destruction of African civilization, is raising, giving us the conceptual, historical conceptual framework that we should not just place our experience in North America from a historical perspective, but from its beginning and that conflict internally and externally that we've been dealing with it. That's one thing, which means that in North America, the way I see it, that we should place that, a couple of projects that we're, those of us who have been brought in this plantation, you're under European domination in this plantation system, there are multiple projects. And one project, which I hear a lot more often than the other in the sense of in present moment, is those which I accept when you look at especially the colonial period, there's Africans that bought in to accepting the European project of even to the point of one, they accepted the European project under its religious domination, and two, accepted the European project of under its empire, and I'm saying old empire when we look at the Portuguese, to some extent, up until Nzinga came, but becoming Christianized, and then three, accepting the European project in relationship to the formulation of this new nation state. That there is, I mean, and Philadelphia again for me looks like you can look at those Africans, those quote-unquote free Africans who wanted to, as Brother Osi said, try to convince their project, a part of their project in accepting European domination was to try to convince the Europeans that they were of value to be included in the project, even though, and I heard both gentlemen say that even though the system of we call it capitalism or the system of America excluded, and the Dred Scott decision is a good example, excluded Africans under any pretense to be involved to any degree. Now, maybe exceptional ones as support, but Africans as a whole will not be involved into the American project. I mean, as a system, when it was designed, and they debated, you know, up to the first debate in the Declaration of Independence, and then the second debate when they came up with the that constitutional, agreement, right, moving from the Confederation of States to the United States. That when they debated and they said, well, I think it was Madison that said, well, they're three-thirds of a person. Therefore, right, if you're going to give them, if you want to argue that you want their representation in the political design, we'll make them three-fifths of a count as three-fifths of a vote in relationship to proportional representation. So, but in spite of that, Africans thought that there's a group that thought that they could persuade them to be included. But the ones that I like to emphasize is that there's been an African presence that has always wanted, now we call it sovereignty, nationalism, and we can see those Africans who, when the Spanish had Florida, that went and that was freeing themselves to go to the Fort Mosaic, Fort Negro, which, you know, in the early Southern colonies, for the purpose of being an independent group out of the European project. And I think that when we talk about the UNIA experience, that historical lineage is the other side. And in between, you have the Denmark VCs, the Nat Turners, and that project, and those people are, I want to argue, especially when Dr. Rogers, when you say about this, the study of Africanology, you know, because in some of us takes the position that it's biological that we see ourselves as an independent entity. Francis Cress-Welsing, you know, Richard King, to the degree. Therefore, our political movement as a project, as a national entity, to be a independent people, a sovereign people, which I think even when they Mario Badelli and then with the Republic of New Africa, they were, you know, that project was to get those five states so that they're and saying willingly, those who believe that we should move to where we are populated and govern ourselves. We could still use the state process, but we'll have control over it. So I think that sometimes we mix up the two, and therefore that's why I believe that history is so important, but we have to look at it from that, use it as a military historical analysis so that we don't get mixed up with those who believe that they think the American project, and we've seen that during the 19th century, the American project is the be all and end all. I mean, even going to Liberia, they fought against the indigenous Africans thinking they were going to come and Christianize them to fall in line with this American project. So I think that when we look at those who are, as the article bring up, you know, or as you brought up, Elliot, with the people who are get selected to be a part of the FBI and the ones who get selected or even coerced to turn in, say, a Malcolm, because those mobilizations of Africans who were talking about nationhood, because Malcolm was talking about nationhood and he was talking about going to the UN. It's interesting that the UN Council is meeting this week, you know, and we as African people have been saying, from the League of Nations on that we need to put our grievance in relationship to the American nation state in the body politics of the construction of the European world. And they're saying no. But I'm only, you know, wanted to end with saying I think that we should accept that we have a large African population who has have bought into the American project, even to be dominated, you know, and on a continent we call it neocolonialism, right? Those who got in those positions and right now are exploiting Africans, you know, for their own self-interest. And that's the same thing that is happening here, even though we're not self-governing in any way. We have people who don't want to see a entity of Africans governing themselves, competing basically. And as Garvey was saying, competing and unifying the African world. And if we go back to we come up to the Bangdan conference, being able to bring up that we can be able to bring together nations who have been exploited by this here global European system and create trade and compete and outcompete the European project. I think if we take that analysis from it, then we can see that these people who do as the article brings up that help the European project, the American project, stop the mobilization and the organization of African people for their own self-interest is just a natural part of our historical journey.
We're in conversation tonight in this open forum Friday with two of our hosts, new hosts that's coming on Time for Awakening, Brother Oshi with African Perspectives, which will air on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays from 11 to 1. And Dr. William Rogers with Black Reality Think Tank, which will air on Saturdays from 4 to 6. Let's take a call before we take a break. Let's go to 414 area code. 414, what's your name? Where you calling from? 414 area code. Let's put them back on hold. They might have stepped away briefly. Let's go to 215. 215 area code. What's your name? Where you calling from?
Hey, Brother Elliot. How you doing, my brother?
Hey, sir. How you doing?
How you doing? How you doing? I'm fine.
I'm doing fine. Hey, Dr. Rogers, Brother Oshie, and Brother Richard. How y'all doing? How y'all brothers doing on this beautiful Friday night?
All right.
All praise be to Allah. I just want to say, Brother Elliot, it's an interesting show. I mean, all your speakers tonight, Dr. Rogers, Brother Oshie, Brother Richard, including yourself, Elliot, you got me really thinking, man. I mean, it's a really provocative show tonight because and I'm glad you read that piece by Sister McKinney when she sent you those article about Gus Savage, because you see so much irony in that. Because, see, again, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan said years ago, he says, when you sell your people out, you become a quote-unquote a house nigger and stuff. He said, what they do is the white folks use you till they use you up. They build what they say on that song, I use you till I use you up. Then when they got no more use for you, they throw you back in the laps of your people. And Mel Reynolds is a prime example of that, because when that Negro was going back, I remember like it was yesterday, he was going around here letting the designers, the designers, Jews, and all the rest of them racist bigots, the neocons, use them, the trash Gus Savage, trash Minister Farrakhan, all they call them brothers, anti-Semites and black racists, all that foolish stuff Reynolds was saying and stuff. What happened? They get this Negro on a charge saying he sexually molested a 12-year-old girl or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, they threw his dumb black behind in jail, ruined his name. You know, he went from out-of-state prison into federal prison. I mean, that's how they took care of that Negro. And during the time he was in prison, the same man who he trashed, Minister Farrakhan, was taking care financially to help take care of his family. Don't you see the irony and all that? The same man that you trashed and stuff, he was taking care of your family. But it wasn't for the minister, his family couldn't have survived during that time in prison. So, I mean, you see, Negroes like him, they never learn. You know, you got, and that's why I say to this day now, people like Ben Carson, Clarence Thomas, all these Negroes that think they white folks niggas. I said they I told people here on Terrestrial Radio Show here in Philadelphia. I said their day is coming. I said sure as the day, sure as God make little green apples. I said them niggas, their day is coming. I said all them niggas that sell out people, they gonna get theirs. Just a matter of time, you know. It's the matter of time. That's why I sit back and let them niggas see all that crazy stuff because they think these white folks love them. But when they got no more use for them, they're going to get jazzed. They're going to get dead. I look at another Negro like Glenn Lowry. Back in the 80s, he was one of the top black conservatives and stuff. He was going around talking all that crazy. These white folks just throw him out there on every major TV station or radio station to trash black people. I don't know what that Negro did, but he did something to piss them crackers off, and now his name is personal non grata now. He's personal non grata in white conservative circles. Glenn Lowry is personal non grata now. Whatever he did, they didn't like it. That's all I know. They didn't like it, you know. So it's a lesson to be learned from them when them Negroes do this stuff, you know.
Brother Oji, Dr. Rogers?
Well, you know, there are plenty of them, and there are more and more of them today. Because we bought into this notion because of the Civil Rights Act of the 60s, open housing and so forth, as I mentioned, that we were more together 100 years ago, 50, 60 years ago than we are today. Because what does America perpetuate? Individualism, materialism, mm-hmm. greed, and violence. And so now you have an individual, you can live where you want. In fact, you still, some of us are so enamored with the idea that I'm the first black to live in this neighborhood. And my mm-hmm. daughter and son are the first black to go to this school and so forth. Because the whole idea that the European has of modernization, of technology, and this, that, and the other is a better system. The whole idea, and we bought into it, and we wanted to, you know, and mm-hmm. we wanted to. So the idea for us, for something that would be tangible for us, for our very survival of independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty is beyond the minds of the mass of our people. It's unfortunately that those of us who think this way is almost like a small group of us, a fringe of us, because the majority of our people still believe that some way, somehow, they're going to make it. They're going mm-hmm. to have the opportunity, you know, to go to these schools, to get these jobs, to get these promotions and so forth. You know, I'll just say it's like this. 100% of us, 40% in this country live at or below the poverty line.
That's true.
The other 40% are 2 to 3 paychecks away, joining the other 40 living at or below the poverty line. That's 80%. Mm-hmm. Then there's 20% of us. 10% of the 20 are doing well. They have mm-hmm. a good job, making probably six figures. They got a pension. They got this. They live in a nice house, drive a nice car. They're doing fine. You know, they got theirs. Then there's the other 10% of us who are doing exceedingly well. You know, they're the Tyler Perrys, the Oprah Winfreys, all mm-hmm. the athletes and entertainers of us. You know, and ironically, here in Atlanta, it is the widest income disparity of our people, of those of us who have and those of us who have not. One reason is a lot of us came to Atlanta because property is inexpensive. They could buy a nice piece of land and build a huge, humongous house. That's why a lot of entertainers have moved here, you know, and so forth. But they have no allegiance. They feel nothing for the other 80% of us who are in that constant struggle because they got theirs. Mm-hmm. And if you didn't get yours, it's your fault.
Mm-hmm.
They don't understand that it's the system.
That's right.
By its very design, it's not meant for us to make it as a people.
You're absolutely right, Brother Ocean. You're absolutely right. I mean, you know,
Dr. Rodney? I think one of the things that
and hearing you, both of you gentlemen, what you're saying is that we have to understand the nature of capitalism. And what capitalism is and what it's designed to do as an economic system. We have to first remember capitalism was only practiced out of slavery. It did not exist anywhere in the world until the English employed it in the system of chattel slavery. It had some early roots. The early roots was called mercantilism. Mm-hmm. But the actual system of capitalism does not begin until slavery. That's why Karl Marx wrote the Communist Manifesto, and Adam Smith, you know, wrote that piece, The Wealth of Nations, in the 17th and 1800s, because capitalism was being practiced based on the system of chattel slavery. And so we African people, meaning us, have never really understood how that works and why that is going to always create us like we are another colony within a colony. There right. used to be a theory among sociologists called internal colony. They said the black community was like an internal colony, which means that it is controlled and dominated by an outside force, and that outside force can give it and take away from whatever it wants, just like they did in Africa during the late 1800s. They turned all of the African countries into colonies. Right. Colonies of the British, the French, the Spanish, Germans, you know, and at that point you suck the resources out and you feed the economy. Well, that's capitalism. That's how capitalism works. And I think that we haven't understood that. And the other part about capitalism is that it also affects Europeans as well. The poor whites are thrown right into the mix of that as well. If they don't psychologically and intellectually have the ability to acquire their own resources within the white system, they are thrown right into the bottom of that mix as well. I think one thing, best examples of that, I don't know how many did any of you see that movie, The Sinking of the Titanic. Mm-hmm. That was a good example of economic structuralism, because in that movie, there were various levels of people were able to live on certain levels of that ship based on their economics.
Right.
Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Right.
And so there were whites that were down in the bottom of that ship because they didn't have the economic withdrawal to live in the upper echelon of that system. And it's the same way today. There are people that won't, there are white people that will not be invited to Warren Buffett's Christmas party either. We're not going to get there either. Well, they're not either.
But see, you're right, Dr. Hodges. But see, the thing about those white folks is that, in spite of all that, they still hold on to their whiteness. You know, they still
hold on to their whiteness, right? But they'll be used as well. Like
I agree. Like for example, the poor whites, they are the ones that, along with some of the more educated and more well-heeled white folks, voted for Donald Trump. Poor whites that was, you know, considered poor working class or whatever like that, they voted for Donald. Because some of these same white folks, Dr. Rogers and Brother Oshie and Brother Elliot and Brother Richard, they went for Ronald Reagan. Reagan said he was going to do the trickle-down thing. He said, let me get these wealthy, rich white folks like myself these big tax breaks, and then they'll trickle down to the poor whites, to the white poor middle class or whatever like that. And guess what? Those white folks still waiting for that. And these same dumb white folks voted for Donald Trump, thinking he's going to wave a magic wand and he's going to put them a chicken in every pot and money in their bank account. It's not going to happen because they're so stupid. Right. They're so stupid they go for the okie doke and stuff, man. Because they can't rise above their whiteness, you know.
I would like to add that whiteness was created for them. Because correct me if I'm wrong, Dr. Rogers.
You're right.
The mercantile system was feudalism, and that was whites' domination over whites coming out of the Christian church system of the church elders being dominated over the serfs, you know, or the peasants. So the notion of even whiteness and it's easier for them to buy into it, because they're already historically orientated to have that kind of minority group over the dominating group, they just had different ethnic groups. But when they come here, they created a classification that took away their ethnicity,
mm-hmm.
not their social structure, but their ethnicity, and gave them privilege by being calling them white.
Right. So, good point, Brother Richard. Good point. And I'll close with this last remark so somebody else can get on. Dr. Roger, when you spoke earlier, you mentioned about the police. You said how, you said when these police, whatever they do, like you said, they can kill you, and when they get in that courtroom, like you said, that white judge, he still operates under the Dred Scott mentality, which is so true, because right here in Philadelphia, as Brother Elliott and Brother Richard would attest to you, a white cop just recently just got fired from the police department because he fatally shot a black man in the back. Well, he had shot another black man in the back in 2010, and he still was allowed to be on the force. Now, he only got fired because of pressure from the black community, because they put constant pressure on our black police commissioner. And just firing him is only the first step. I mean, it's a long haul, because you know how, like you said, this arbitration process goes to these racist police unions. They're so powerful. So even firing that devil or that cracker, there's no guarantee he's going to be off, because he could get fired. And these police unions are so strong, they'll ship his little racist murderer behind somewhere else and get him a job in some township somewhere so he could murder some more black people. So, I mean, Bafana was definitely, obviously, a good first step, because here in this city, I just read in the paper, Dr. Rise and Brother Oshie, this district attorney's office here in Philadelphia, which is now in the hands of a black lady who she's the interim DA to the race in November. Well, this lady's predecessor, this Negro who's in federal prison now, Steph Williams, was a despicable disgrace of a Negro. He's in federal prison now for bribery and everything else. Well, him and his racist predecessor, who we call Mama Lynn Abraham, they had neither one of them prosecuted a police officer, according to the paper today, since 1999. That's, you're talking over 20 years ago. So the last time a police officer was actually charged by the DA's office for shooting a black person was 1999. So, I mean, it just goes to show you what we're up against in this city. But the point being is that, like you're right, Dr. Rogers, when that white judge, just like you saw down in case in point, the back what you're saying, Dr. Rogers, when you saw that white judge, who, matter of fact, who retired, I think, last week or this week, who sat there in St. Louis, knowing that this white cop had lied through his teeth when he shot that brother and stuff in a car chase and say, I'm going to shoot the MF and everything like that. And the only DNA was on the gun was the cop's was the cop's DNA. And yet this white judge can sit there and look at that and say, well, hey, it was reasonable doubt. You know, I could give him the benefit of doubt that he didn't do that. He's telling the truth. But he knew in his heart of hearts that this cop was lying. But like you said, because he looked out there, he see white cop, black man. Who you think he going to believe? Who you think his racist heart going to go towards?
That's right.
Like you said, Dr. Rogers, the operator of that Dred Scott mentality, and some of our people just don't realize that.
Thank you for your call, Joe.
Thanks, Brother Elliott. Well, y'all brothers, keep the good work out. Talk to y'all soon.
Right.
All right. Thank you, brother.
We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, we got another call on hold. When we come back, you can join the conversation. We just got an open line, 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Friday open forum this evening, but we have two special guests, two new hosts coming onto the Time for Awakening platform. Brother Oshie with African Perspectives, which will be aired Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays from 11 to 1. And Dr. William Rogers with the Black Reality Think Tank. You can get involved in the conversation too, and we'll be right back after this break.
Tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
Not a Wu-Tang-a.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
Hey, did y'all see the stuff I posted on my wall?
Nah, it didn't even show up in my news feed.
Man, I'm done with social media. All the injustice and brutality going around, and it's like they're trying to suppress our voice. We're trying to get the message out there, and you can't even share empowerment and what's going on around the country either.
Mm-mm. Nah, don't be dumb with social media, though. It's a tool, and there is a place where we have a voice. It's a Let's Buy Black 365 social network. You do anything you would on any other social network. Post pictures, videos, status updates, share resources and community news. But on Let's Buy Black 365, it's a platform for us and by us to tell our messages.
Whoa, that's like a digital underground railroad.
What's the name of that site again?
It's letsbuyblack365.com.
Yeah, I heard about that. It's all about networking, and you get points, right?
Yeah, the more you network, post, and share, the more points you get. Plus, you get points for posting pictures, sharing information, attending community events, and inviting others to network with you on the app.
Wow, that's all I need to know. I'm gonna go download that app right now.
Now, better yet, let me invite you so I can get some points. It's all about empowerment and solutions, y'all.
Yeah, that's what's up. I'm all in.
Let's do it. Let's share our stories.
Let's buy Black365.com.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
I come here tonight and plead with you. Believe in yourself and believe that you're somebody. As I said to the group last night, nobody else can do this for us. No document can do this for us. No Lincolnian Emancipation Proclamation can do this for us. No Kennisonian or Johnsonian Civil Rights Bill can do this for us. If the Negro is to be free, he must move down into the inner resources of his own soul and sign with the pen and ink of self-assertive manhood his own Emancipation Proclamation. Don't let anybody take your manhood. Be proud of our heritage. As somebody said earlier tonight, we don't have anything to be ashamed of. Somebody told a lie one day. They couched it in language. They made everything black, ugly, and evil. Look in your dictionary and see the synonyms of the word black. It's always something degrading and low and sinister. Look at the word white. It's always something pure, high, and clean. But I want to get the language right tonight. I want to get the language so right that everybody here will cry out, yes, I'm black, I'm proud of it, I'm black and beautiful.
Today, our people can see that we're faced with a government conspiracy. This government has failed us. The senators who are filibustering concerning your and my rights, that's the government. Don't say it, Southern senators. This is the government. This is a government filibuster. It's not a segregationist filibuster. It's a government filibuster. Any kind of activity that takes place on the floor of the Congress or the Senate, that's the government. So this government has failed us. The government itself has failed us. And the white liberals who have been posing as our friends have failed us. And once we see that all these other sources to which we've turned have failed, we stop turning to them and turn to ourselves. We need a self-help program, a do-it-yourself philosophy, a do-it-right-now philosophy. It's already too late philosophy. This is what you and I need to get with. And the only way we're going to solve our problem is with a self-help program. Before we can get a self-help program started, we have to have a self-help philosophy. Black nationalism is a self-help philosophy. What's so good about it? You can stay right in the church where you are and still take black nationalism as your philosophy.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. And we're in Friday open forum, but we're featuring two of our new hosts coming onto the Time for Awakening platform. Brother Oshi with African Perspectives and Dr. William Rogers with Black Reality Think Tank joining us this evening to kind of billboard their program, just kick around some issues with the listening audience. And tonight you can be part of the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Let's go right back to the phone before we talk again. 602, join the conversation.
Yes, good brothers. This is Brother Marcus from Memphis.
How are you, Brother Marcus?
I'm doing great. And, I just want to say to your guests, Brother Oshia and Brother Rogers, you know, I'm going to be looking forward to the program, you know. Yeah, you are on fire tonight. You know, the radio on fire, I'm telling you. You know, you know, well, you know, Brother Oshi Tarek, you know, he said, look, if we ain't solve our problem with these people in 400 years, you know, they have no intention of solving our problem because any human relationship could have been worked out in 400 years. So, Brother Oshi, you're correct. And what the doctor said, Dr. Rogers said about the plantation. You see, the USA is one big plantation, you know. This is one big plantation, as the brother said, you know, because after Marcus Garvey died, there was a brother by the name of Carlos Cooks who picked up the baton after Garvey. But you don't hear a lot about Cooks because, you see, Cooks avoided the media. And he took the religious element out of the movement. He said, your religion is your personal thing. But there was a brother there that picked up after Cooks. His name was Robert Harris. And he wrote a book called Carlos Cooks and Black Nationalism, From Garvey to Malcolm. And he also wrote another book called The USA, My Larger Prison. Now, that book there, I was very fortunate to meet this man in his last 3 years of his life. And it really opened my eyes, you know. He was correct because he said, look, the food we eat, we don't produce that food. I don't see no black farms out there producing food for black folks, you know, on a mass level. So we don't know what to eat. And you go to the store, you pick up some of the stuff you can't even pronounce some of the ingredients in this stuff. So we, you know, this stuff giving us cancer. The clothes we wear, we don't manufacture those clothes. You know this history with him giving the Indians blankets laden with smallpox that annihilated the red man. Obviously, the educational system is miseducating black people. It's producing self-hating black people. That's why we have all this violence in our community, because we produce anti-black people. The medical system, you go to the doctor tell you, wow, you know what? I have to operate on you. I have to give you a major surgery. You don't know, you know, but they milk the insurance company. They milk the Medicaid. Right. They milk the... And last but not least is the police, who is the warden of the prison, because we don't get no protection from the system, from the police. So you're right. The whole thing is one big plantation. So I am going to be looking forward to this program, and I appreciate it 1,000%. Keep up the good work, and thank you, good brothers.
Thank you for your call, brother Marcus.
No problem.
Thank you, my brother. Thank you. I look forward to you listening and contributing.
Yes, my brother. Definitely, I will. Thank you.
Can I, Elliot, and brothers, raise something that y'all were in our conversation so far is stimulating, and it's something I kind of repeat, and it goes to your point, Dr. Rogers, when you talk about Cuffy and education, because I think that, you know, and also Brother Osi, when you were using the example of Atlanta and the income disparity that exists, I think that when we if we take the analysis from even Boys and before with blinding them, that we are, and even Richard Allen said that we're a nation within a nation, and we develop our conceptual framework and our look from that perspective. I think that, you know, I raised the point, and I would like y'all feedback in relationship to that, that the only, especially in North America, particularly, the only natural resource we have to build, because you need an economy, to build an economy off of, is the development of our human capital, which is our Africanness. That is our natural resource. And we should be creating the infrastructure, whether that be, that's why I liked what you were saying about Cuffy, the educational aspect of that. So that was one thought I would like to get feedback on. And in relationship to what you were saying, Brother Osi, one criticism I have that I don't see enough of is that there is no analysis of our internal economic disparity, so that people can see that there is this wide gap between blacks who have and blacks who don't. The analysis always are economic disparity in relationship to whites, you know, and they feed us that over and over, even to what I hear that we won't catch up for 200 and something years if as it is. But there's never no notion. There's never no communication putting out, and I've looked for the analysis too of how the gap between, with these different projects, between blacks who have and blacks who don't, so that we can see somebody within the black community, especially during the civil rights era, after the civil rights era, is benefiting off of this process, and there's a whole lot more that's not. So I just thought that the 2 points that y'all raised was important from that perspective.
Yeah. Let me, Brother Elliot, if I could, I want to just, Brother, just raise a wonderful point that really kind of has sparked some interest in me again. This is something I've been really giving a lot of thought to. And you're right. We are a nation within a nation where we haven't really clearly identified our economic base, our independent economic base, because we definitely don't own the land, so we can't claim the land as a economic base. They made sure that they took a lot of that from us, right after the the whole beginning of the 20th century. We lost a lot of our land and property. We had farms, things like that, so they took that away. And So we don't have that. But however, that human capital that we have is a very strong base.
Yes.
And our ancestors recognize that. I read an article once written by a Caucasian. And he said the most dangerous black man in America was a man by the name of A. Philip Randolph. Mm. Because he had organized a labor pool called the Brotherhood of Sleeping Car Porters.
Yes.
He created an independent black union that had never, ever has happened, nor had happened since. So if all of our unions are either tied in with the AFL or CIO or some other trade. But A. Philip Randolph created an independent black union. And what he did is he gave that plan to Martin Luther King. Mm. And King incorporated some of the principles of that plan into his Poor People's Campaign.
Mm.
That was one of the reasons why they so vehemently went against King. A lot of people have said that, you know, he died because he made a comment on the Vietnam War and some of those other things. I raised the issue that it's got something to do with the organizing of that Poor People's Campaign and some of the economical theories that he had began to move toward about the redistribution of wealth in this country and some of those kinds of ideas.
Oh, but I agree. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
That were plans. They had some blueprints where they were drawing up how to do that. And that would have been a threat to the economic power of America, because then that would have given us some autonomy and some independence where we could have wielded some power against your Jay Carnegies, Rockefellers, and all of those billionaires that were controlling the industrial wealth, you know, of both the North and the South. Can you imagine what would have happened if you could have organized all of the cotton pickers of the South in Mississippi during the 20th century? Do you imagine what would have happened?
Well,
one of the reasons that I read why they were so vehement against the Voting Rights Act. They weren't so worried about you voting and putting somebody else. They were worried about organizing workers. So I wanted to throw that piece in there along with
that. I agree. I see that. I see it with the him being, was he in Memphis with the trash? Was it the?
Well, yeah, that's where he got killed. Mm-hmm.
Right. It was to speak to the sanitation workers.
Right, the sanitation workers. That's exactly right. That was another one.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I think
in our organizing to deal with labor and so forth in this country, to form something independent, I think that's antithetic to what happens here to us here in America. There is no independence for us here in America. It is only assimilation and to some false or neo-Marxist acceptance for us. And there's truly no sovereignty for us, because we can't be sovereign in this land. The Caucasians can't be sovereign in this land. You see what happened in the Northwest, in Montana, and in Washington. You know, so that's why, you know, even though I was a supporter of the Republican New Africa back in the 60s when they first formed, went to a few meetings and so forth, understood the ideology, understood where the Nation of Islam was coming from and so forth. But when I looked at later on in our study of history, and when I looked at any time that we had some gain, there's Caucasian backlash. Always that Caucasian backlash. You know, of the 60s, the backlash was Nixon. Coming into the 80s, the backlash was Reagan. And to me, all the way up, all the folks, even Barack Obama included, maintained that backlash until the point of now the most deeply reactionary person, just like Woodrow Wilson, is this dude that's in there now.
Well, you know,
probably the most damaging of them, though, was Reagan. Reagan was the most damaging, because Reagan caused what we see right now in this huge disparity of income in this country, no, literally in this world. Because now you have a 1% of a group of people who have about 80% of the wealth. These are multi-billionaires. Billionaires. And so that's why, to me, we cannot affect this economic system. This is a corrupt, evil system. And what we need to do is look at, exactly what we need to do is get out of it totally and formulate things for ourselves. But I know that, like I said earlier, the majority of our people believe that some way, somehow, just like the Caucasians, they've been fed the idea that, hey, you too, because they, you know, there is no discussion of redistribution of wealth. In fact, they didn't even want to touch that discussion, you see, because the Caucasians who have so damn much, their messages to other Caucasians, see, you too can have this too. You know, you can be this. In essence, they can't, but they give them that idea. So they hold out hope that they too can enter the realm of the multi-billionaires or the multi-millionaires.
Hey, Brother Oshie, let me say something in reference to what the point that you raised. Okay. When you mentioned about the backlash, if any of our people attempted to do things, and I do agree, but I think the thing that should be different moving forward, and that we have to develop, and it's being done. I'm more than sure it's being done as we speak. Hold on a second, it's being done as we speak. That. And it ties into what Dr. Rogers mentioned earlier about plantation mentality that has been conditioned since we've been brought here. I think that the reason it's been a backlash against our people because we've been conditioned not to respond. And that's been almost our MO. We do have instances in our history where our people did respond. But by and large, we've been conditioned not to respond. You know, one of the most glaring examples, even for our people that are not conscious, is their shining star, President Obama. Now, they watched him for his 8 years of presidency, and white folks, whether it's Democrats or Republicans, called this man every name in the book, called his wife, children, everything. And he didn't.
Everything.
And he didn't respond. And our people thought that was some type of badge of honor, or he was on a different level. See, that conditioning of our people not to respond goes back to the conditioning of slave verses out of Christianity, where if you get smacked, you get smite on one cheek, turn your other cheek. And all that other,
yeah.
Nobody else on the face of the earth responds to people like that. If you're attacked or if you're wronged or if something is done against you, then you respond to let people know that you can't do this. But our people have been conditioned here through chattel enslavement not to respond to white folks. It's ways that we can respond to these people. And it's all about how we do it. I think that the name of your program, Dr. Rogers, about the Black Reality Think Tank, and me and Richard talk about this all the time, that we need think tanks in all of these major cities, towns,
yes,
municipalities where black people are. And we need to develop a war strategy when dealing with white people. We haven't developed, they've developed war strategies dealing with us.
That's right.
And you see it.
Yeah.
But
right.
Our people haven't developed a war strategy dealing with Europeans. And when I say war strategy, I'm not talking about us running out here and getting weapons and firing at white. I'm not talking about that. Because he's not
right.
Necessarily doing that with us. Sure, it boils down to that in certain instances. But his war strategy dealing with us is totally mental.
Right.
He attacks our minds through education, especially through education, through all strata of life. He has a war strategy dealing with black people, but we don't have a war strategy to respond to him.
And I think if
I may add to that war strategy, the biggest thing that I see, or I'll put on the table, is the question about thinking through what the opposition did and will do.
With a historical perspective, I agree with that.
That's exactly right. And that's why I mentioned earlier in our discussion the work that Du Bois did on Philadelphia, the book, The Philadelphia Negro, a Social Studies. One of Du Bois's problems in terms of his solution that he offered was he said that we need to work with white people to get them to better understand the fact that we are not the stereotypical thing that they think we are. Mm-hmm. And very clearly, we know now that you can't get white folks to think about nothing like that.
Exactly. Exactly. Dr. Rogers.
And their war strategy is to come up with a scientific racism to prove scientifically why we are inferior.
Right.
They did that just about, 20-some years ago. Ernestine and Murray. The bell curve.
Right.
The Caucasian named Russ out of Canada, who said he has empirical data proving that African people are inferior to Caucasian. You know? Mm-hmm. So there's nothing we can do. There's nothing we can say that will ever change their minds. Listen, brothers, I have to make a run. I got to get ready to go. I'm on a trip to Cuba. I'm going to Cuba. Yeah.
Well, Brother Oshie, I know that when you come back and debut African Perspectives, that you'll have some insights and give our people a flavor of our people down there and what's going on. Because we know, quite to the contrary of what we see on the television, that the majority of Cuba is children of African descent that's been dispersed.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I know that you'll give a perspective of what's been going on once you get back.
Let me just end this. Let me just say this before I go, and I appreciate this, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard, and you too, Dr. Roger, with much love and respect for all you and your listening audience. I'm so honored for the opportunity to be on Time for an Awakening and Black Talk Radio Network.com. I look forward to this. I look forward to trying my best to present information. I don't give my opinion. Because my opinion is profane, and Dr. Rogers knows this. So what I try my best to do is give the perspective of our scholars, our historians, those warrior scholars and warrior scholars and ancestors and elders. So I end the program. Each program, I end the program with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hand of the oppressor is the mind of the oppressed. So my program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. Thank you, brothers. You brothers have a good one. I'll continue to listen.
Peace. All right.
Have safe trip, safe travels, brother.
Thank
you. Let's grab a couple more calls before we wind the program down. You all right time-wise, Dr. Roger?
Yes, I'm good.
Brother Richard, you all right?
Yes.
Yeah, let's see if we can clear the board here. Let's go to 646. Brother, join the conversation.
Hey, what's happening, Brother Elliot, Richard, and to your guests there? Hey, listen, let me tell you something. Black folks ain't gonna never give up the white man. Oh. They looking to get closer and closer to this cracker. You know, man, they got a Negro team, man, on satellite radio named Mark Thompson. Massimino Mofuno, whatever the hell you want to call him. This Negro got the nerve to call himself a Pan-African. But every time you turn around, he pushing us into the Democratic Party. Always trying to get some black mulatto to be the face of the bastards. And whenever you challenge this Negro, he got the nerve to get upset and offended because, you know, his new thing now is pushing this Kamala Harris. Now, you know me, I got on there and I told him I couldn't support the chick because she's immoral. He said, well, what do you mean she's immoral? I said, well, she came into prominence on her back with an affair with Willie Brown. Oh, what are you talking about? I ain't never heard nothing like that. Where that at? I said, Google it. Just Google it. You know what I mean? It's known fact out in San Francisco that while he was married to his wife, I don't care if him and his wife were separated or not or whatever, he was married to her. That was his little side piece. And I guess she did good enough and she performed her duties well enough that he basically took her under his wing and moved her along into the political party or whatever, to the point to where she decided she didn't need Willie no more and decided to marry her Neanderthal, just like Obama. You know what I mean? Another Negro that was pushed upon black folks, and black folks just went hook, line, and sinker. And after 8 years, what did we get in return for his black ass? Nothing. But see, we as a people don't do critical analysis on these individuals. Because people like him say, well, these are the people that we supposed to support. But my whole question is this. Why should black people any damn way support the Democratic Party in the first place? What the hell has the Democratic Party ever done for the liberation and the freedom of African people under these conditions?
Well, you know the answer to that, Jay.
Yeah, but I'm saying, you know, it's just like nobody out here is really doing any serious historical critique on it. Nobody's out there pushing the narrative for what's really going on. You know, like, I know a brother, I guess some of y'all have heard of him. As a matter of fact, I think all of y'all may have heard of him, by the name of Claytel Benjamin. If you haven't, you really need to read some of the stuff that he writes. I'm going to be honest with you. I like Claytel. I've met Claytel. I've had numerous conversations with Claytel. He makes a real, real compelling argument from the point of the Negro and his love of the white man in regards to politics. I mean, honestly, I don't think, truthfully, nobody writes as well as he does in regards to convincing the Negro to be a Democrat. You know what I mean? And to love the white daddy on those terms. You know what I mean? But I've never seen anybody from our so-called side as conscious Africans really, really get into a serious analytical debate with this guy to challenge these things that he said. I think that's one of the things that we're really, really missing.
But do you think they would? Do you think that the white, the media, and I even hate to say white, but that group of who controls the media, who controls the tool, the weapon of mind control, who selects the individual who will continue to propagate the thinking for the population that he wanted to control, that he would put in place, he or she would put in place somebody that would go against their person when they are really trying to do a job, because they're always in reactionary mode. There's young people who are resisting them right now on the street, who is getting their information from various words. It might not be as cogent as we think it should be, but they're getting their information and they're going to the street. They got to put them under control, and they got to put, you know, what they call them, millennials. They got to bring them into the structure that they need in order to maintain dominance. So do you think they're going to bring somebody else out there?
Well, it's a possibility, because what had happened was the way that the issue had really started with this Thompson cat was he had Jenks from the Young Turks on. And, you know, Jenks is no fan of Hillary Clinton. I mean, you know, in all truthfulness in the media, the only person, honestly, that tells the truth about Hillary Clinton, as far as I'm concerned, is Eutrice Lee. I mean, she's done some real extensive work on, you know, Hillary Clinton in regards to what she's done with her foundation in Haiti and all of that stuff. If we was really a democracy in this country and things were really up and up, she she's being dealt with in regards to her foundation in Haiti. She's had this white boy on named Charles O'Dell that has basically laid it out. And I, when I say laid it out, laid it out where she's done all sorts of corrupt stuff that, you know, for some reason the government just hasn't decided to go after her. And they're not going to go after her because of who and what she is. And, you know,
you're breaking up a little bit, Jay.
That's why I say it's so funny when I see them saying they're going to go after Trump and this whole Russia thing. When it's all said and done, it's just smokescreen. But I think that the cats like the Young Turks and some of these other people that are Bernie supporters and that's really into this whole progressive Democrat thing, that's trying to really take the corporate money out of the Democrats and do something, yeah, they got a serious pushback. But the thing is, if you're going to talk about Democrats and all of that, they have no real platform for the people. You know what I mean? That's why they got to have these clowns like Mark Thompson and the rest of them come out there and constantly attack people like Bernie Sanders and all of that and talk about the party need to unite under someone like a damn Cory Booker or Pamela, Kamala Harris or somebody else like that. I'm not never gonna vote again for a goddamn mulatto in my life. You know what I mean? Because the last mulatto we had in office, he showed and told and proved what he was gonna do for black folks, which was absolutely nothing. So why would I go back down that road? You know what I'm saying? So great. I mean, I don't understand. You know why we are even as a people dealing in regards to this whole Democratic Party. I don't know if we need to try and figure out starting a new party or whatever, but the real issue and the real problem in this, truthfully, is to be told, is the black woman. She's a real damn problem in all of this. I'm sorry to say it, because she's the most righteous bastard. She's the one who can't realize what's in her best interest. But then again, you know,
wait a minute, you're breaking up, right? Jay, you break. Say that again.
I'm sorry. The black woman wants to be closer and closer to the white daddy more than anybody. She's the real problem when it comes down to this whole political thing. Now, we don't want to address it and we don't want to deal with it, but she's really the problem, the black woman. Because she wants to be a part of it.
Well, I can't necessarily agree with that, but
I got a little problem with that.
Yeah, I can't agree with that, Jay.
No, I'm going to tell you why. I'll tell you why right quick. It's this simple. They are the ones who 90% of the time vote for them bastards. They don't go and separate themselves and deal in independence. They don't go out there and deal and hold these people like Hillary Clinton and the rest of them accountable for what they've done to black men and the black youth. No, they just think that they're the better of the worst of the Republican so-called party, and then they lock, stock, and barrel, give them their vote. That's exactly what happened with Hillary Clinton. They never challenged her. I mean, come on, let's be honest. 90% of black women and maybe higher gave their vote to Hillary Clinton. That's not good for black people.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't consider that part of the problem. I think that ignorance in black people is part of the problem. And I'm not going to say that it's women or men or children. It's all of our fault that this stuff is going on. Dr. Rogers, Richard, yeah. John, go ahead, Dr. Rogers.
Go ahead, Dr. Rogers.
Okay, I definitely agree with you, Brother Elliot. You got to remember, the black woman is the incubator for black life. She brings to the planet our culture and our history, and she has to be protected. And what, unfortunately, the brothers have not been able to do that. In a way that she needs to be protected.
Yeah.
And she has been left to do for herself. And that's a problem.
And, I could agree with that.
Yeah. So there has to be a shift in the way we look at her, because she's very vulnerable out there without our protection. Every animal kingdom
has a system. I was watching a documentary on the short side where the female lion goes out and does the hunting. Then she comes back and she brings the food for the male lion and the female. The male eats first. They eat before the kids. The reason why is because when the male gets through eating, he has to watch the pack from the hyenas. Because when the babies get ready to eat, the hyenas start moving in. So the male lion has to eat first so that the protection can be given to the female. So the point I'm making is we've lost that connection. And as a result, now our females are vulnerable to everything.
And Dr. Rogers, let me say, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was going to say, that's it. We got to get that back on track.
Let me say something. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry. Let me say something in reference to what you said, and then I'll pass it to Richard. I totally agree with what you're saying, Dr. Rogers. And that goes back to what we mentioned in the right after the break when we started the conversation about a war strategy. This man has developed a war strategy when it comes to black families. He has put the processes in place that develops problems between black men and black women. We're getting a little feedback. I think it might be Jay's phone. But he's put all of these... Say that again.
Is it better now?
Yes, yes. He's put all these stumbling blocks in place in black families that'll cause divisiveness and divisiveness between the black men and black women, where we start sniping and attacking one another, and we don't see the unseen hand in the back that's causing all these problems. And then the next thing you know, some of our people who are less up on certain issues, you see them all on social media. They can't wait to attack black women. Black women is a problem. Black women is a problem. When it's this man is the problem, he's causing all this foolishness to go on and causing our people to attack one another. Divide and conquer. That's always been his strategy.
Always been the strategy.
And I just say once again that we have to also, conceptualize or create the paradigm that the black women that we see are in the Democratic Party. It's two things. They are part of that historical development, as you say, Jay, that wants to get close to the white daddy or who accepts the American project. And two, that they now, for the reasons that you gentlemen have raised, are recognized politically that they are, they have to support something because they align with the women's movement. They have to support something that would provide them with the political entree, the power entree for their own development. And going to the point, because they are the now even the breadwinners in most cases, because they're the ones that are getting the most jobs. But I think if we don't put them in the context of those who accept the political project in relationship to why they are in the party and they would support a Hillary Clinton, but then it's the flip side. Because those men who are a part of that project of accepting white domination or the American project, they have been killed through, as you say, Elliot, the warfare strategy. Look at the amount of men that are in the economic machinery. It's more women who are getting jobs than men. Who are in the educational machinery, it's more women in that machinery than men. So, I mean, as far as black women, so they are, and you can track their historical development from the time when Frederick Douglass all the way through of now, they are more centered as a political entity within the black, quote unquote, that group within the black community than any other. Because black men haven't been organizing around black people. They've been organizing around issues. And now they cook them out.
But I just get a kick out of a Negro who's on Sirius Radio talking about he's a Pan-African and he pushing the Democratic Party like they the daddy. mean, it just, and you know, pushing a woman who's immoral, number one, who really has no plan and no agenda, who's back in something as single payer, who went out in California, didn't really do anything to help the prison population and a whole bunch of other things, if you look at her record, because some people supposedly see her as a somewhat pretty face as a viable candidate in the lines of that Puff the Magic Negro Obama. We now supposed to go along with this, but you call yourself a Pan-African.
Now, remember the Sullivan principles. Remember the Sullivan principles when you talk about, and remember what Sullivan said, because Sullivan came up with the whole thing of going to Africa, but his whole thing was to bring the U.S. corporations to Africa, which in that context, again, putting it in, this it would be placing as a Pan-Africanist.
I tell you this much, as you could see, it didn't happen. Why? Because they didn't go over there with dignity and respect for our African brothers and sisters. And what happened? Now you got the Russians, the Indians, and the Chinese over there doing things that America ain't even doing. And the more and more you look at it, America is becoming a joke nation with this wing nut in office. You know what I'm saying? So America is falling on many levels that, you know, we just don't see. And the only thing it looks like to me is that these Neanderthals are just behaving more and more like Neanderthals, trying to put some sort of racist agenda of trying to make a race war, which there's going to be a lot of casualties on our side because we ain't doing the right thing by being part of gun clubs and having legal weapons in our homes and being prepared to defend ourselves, thinking again that the white daddy gonna save us. You know what I mean? It ain't gonna happen, you know, because these Billy Bobs and Billy Joes, they prepared for this, you know, and we don't even realize how prepared they really are. That's why, you know, Elliot, you got to get those brothers on again that had that gun club there in Philadelphia, or, you know, need to do something to on the website to put more information out there, because we got to really start moving forward with that type of agenda to educate these knuckleheads that they better be ready to defend themselves, because this Neanderthal, he never stopped. As you could see, quietly, he's trying to appeal Obamacare again, quietly, doing it in the dark of the night again. You know what I mean? And it may happen and it may not happen. You know what I mean? It's just a never stop thing. And you know what's so funny is he's been in office almost 9 months now, and you know he hasn't done anything. And in those 9 months, for all of those people who love the Democratic Party hasn't put together no agenda whatsoever to fight this piece of garbage over these 9 months. Now, what do that tell you? Wouldn't that tell you that they in cahoots with this bastard on some sort of level?
Yeah, well, Malcolm said it in that little clip that I played just before we came back from break. House of the floor of Senate is the government. It ain't Southern segregationist. It ain't Republican or Democrat. It's the government.
It's like, how could you, in this period of time, knowing that you got what did he call? I don't even remember. He called the guy over in North Korea. What was the name he called him?
Rocket Man.
And I think he called him a dummy or dotard. Yeah, I think that.
But just, I mean, how could you call another head of the state Rocket Man?
Well, that's it. And I mean, who's you're dealing with. Look at the source.
Yeah, but think about it. How could you have the gall to call somebody Rocket Man? And now tonight, let me say this right quick to you. Now tonight, he says to the people at the rally, he said Trump wishes NFL owners would tell anthem protesters, get that son of a bitch off the field right now. This is what he said to a this is what he said to some people that he's given a speech to. You know what? I mean, what kind of human being is this man? I mean, now and we as I just ask this question is, what position do we have in this country moving forward with a piece of garbage like that in office? Where do we fit into this? Are we going to wake up as a people and see that we got to move forward? We got to go homeward bound, as Kenny Burke said in his song, "Keep Rising to the Top." You know, you need to stop. You know what you need to do? And I say this to everybody. Take that song by Kenny Burke and listen to that song. And you know what that song is telling you? To go back home to Africa. You got to listen to the words and listen to it clearly. And he's telling us that we need to get ourselves together and go homeward bound and to go back home.
Jay,
we need to do something.
Thank you for your contribution, man.
But you can't live on this plantation. You're on a
plantation. No, you can't. You know something, man. I don't see how. And I mean, I'm honestly saying this, and I think as an elder, you would understand that. When I was coming up back in the 70s and the 80s, it was the last bastion of, I would say, black folks progressing to a certain level. Like, my parents came up in poverty. They got good city jobs. They was able to retire. I was able to get a good city job, retire. My kids now are not going to have the pension that I have. You know what I'm saying? They're not even giving pensions anymore. You know, now kids are going to school and getting consumed in all types of debt. That's going to basically take them forever to pay off. You know what I mean? If you're not getting your children to speak multiple languages and have a worldview, they're going to be stuck in the quagmire. In all truthfulness, the percentage of kids today in our community that's going to move forward, I don't even know honestly what the percentage is. We are really in some serious trouble, and I don't even think we really, really understand it. And it's sad because I know where my parents came from. But I remember when I was born, my grandmother and grandfather and aunt and uncle, 50-some years ago, bought the first house. It was one of the first black families on the block out in Lawton, Queens. Now there's no more whites there. You know, I know how they sent my mother and them to college, and how I was able to go to college and blah, 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 blah. And I know now that it's just that there. I know I was able to get a decent. Now,
did you say Lawton, Queens, my brother?
Yeah, Lawton, Queens. You know where Springfield Gardens is?
I lived on 233rd and Francis Lewis Boulevard.
Well, I grew up on 220 South Kingsport, where the McDonald's was down the block.
Okay, I know exactly where you are.
You know where Springfield Gardens High School was? Well, my grandmother's house was...
You're breaking up, Jay.
My grandmother's house was right down the block on the left-hand side from the McDonald's, and that McDonald's been there over 40, 50 years, probably. Yeah, so that's where I grew up. That's right. And you know something? There ain't no more whites in the neighborhood. And when we first moved there 54 years ago, 54, 55 years ago, we were the third black family there. Now you have nothing there but Jamaicans. And other West Indian. You know what I mean? And like you were saying earlier about communities, that may be, as far as authentic, I'm talking about authentic black, were the ones who moved in there. Jamaicans and them came in afterwards. There is no place in New York City where as authentic blacks have a community where they own and control the commerce in the community. Now, Jamaicans right. do it, Puerto Ricans do it, all other nationalities do it. We the only ones. We the only people that can't go into no other community and open up commerce. And that's an issue, but we don't understand it. But we want to be a part of the Democratic Party and think that we really, really free. We don't understand right. it, brother. We don't really understand. And I hope as you do your show that you inform us on that and that you point us in the direction of reclaiming ourselves as authentic Africans. Because I'm not trying to integrate with this cracker, and I really don't, honestly, if the truth be told, want to integrate with some of these other nationalities either, because I know they ain't my friend, they my enemy. So, you know, I'm enjoying listening and hotel and talk to y'all on Sunday. Peace, brothers.
All right, Jack.
Hey, Cam. Take care.
We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, we're going to wind things down with one of our special guests this evening and an upcoming host on the program, his program, African World View, I mean, Black Reality Think Tank, I'm sorry, will be debuting within the next couple of weeks. We're going to fast track it, Dr. Rogers.
Exactly, we are. Yeah.
We'll be right back.
Are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
I transformed a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one of the tangible transformations I've created for entrepreneurs in various industries around the country. If this isn't what you think of when you think of accounting and business consulting, then get ready to take down this invaluable information. Are you an entrepreneur suffering with a stagnating company? Have headache customers, staff, or vendors? Are you rebounding from a loss and need help achieving your unrealized potential? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? Hi, my name is Nataki Kanban. If you're ready to go beyond advising and coaching and get results, then call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions recommend and implement the best comprehensive sales, administrative, human resources, accounting, and operations to help you grow into your vision for yourself and your company. Again, from anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072 or pull us up on your device right now and book your free consultation at www.newbusinesssolutions.com. And just mention you heard this special announcement on Time for an Awakening.
Darkness no longer, a child is born. Mother shed tears of joy as baby tests his lungs. My daddy's not there where he ought to be. Somewhere in Georgia, skinning and shooting craps on his knees. Another victim born out here in the hood. And based on statistics, it really ain't all good. Welfare takes the tab, and daddy can't sign, and it can't be seen. The family becomes a crime. The hunt is on, and brother, you're the prey. Serving time in jail, it just ain't the way. I'm living so hard, babe, that my hair's gray. We got to make a change. It's a brand new day.
A new world order, a brand new day.
It's a new
a
day.
A change of mind for the human race.
It's a
new world
day. Operation in flux, and it's on the way. We just marched a million plus the other day. Look, look, we all witnessed the sweat rolling down Miss Liberty's head. She knows the sleeping giant, she's no longer sleeping dead. Oh, what a fulfillment of prophecy. Let us teach the children freedom's never been free. It's okay to cry, go ahead and cry. Cause Jesus wept, but hope and faith be kept. It's a new day.
A world order, a brand new day.
It's
a change of mind for the human race.
It's a
new world order, a brand new day.
It's
a change of mind for the human race.
The die has been cast, and there's no need to fear. Cause people, the answer to your prayers are here. Sister Mary, don't you weep. Tell mother not to moan. We need the love, and daddy's coming home. There's no need to worry. The times dictate a plan. Mother Earth's given birth to a brand new man. Sister, I know you're misunderstood, but hold on to your man. Cause the future looks good. It's a new day.
A new world order, a brand new day.
It's a new
change of mind for the human race.
Welcome back. The time for an awakening.
A brand new day.
We were in open forum this evening. Open forum Friday. Or freestyle Friday, so to speak. We were showcasing two of our new hosts coming on to Time for Awakening. Dr. William Rogers with Black Reality Think Tank. Brother Oshie, African Perspectives. Two new programs that will be debuting on Time for Awakening within the next week, at least by the 1st of October. So keep your ears peeled. You'll hear different stuff about the new programming coming up. You'll see stuff on the website. You'll see things on the Facebook page. They'll be joining us again very soon, within about the 1st of the month. Let's, Dr. Rogers.
Yes, sir.
We're getting ready to wind things down. I want to thank you for being with us. Give the people
thank you so
a,
much
for giving the
people wonderful
for giving the people a little flavor of Black Reality Think Tank. And before you leave us this evening, you know, just let everybody know what's going on. What they can expect, again, for people that didn't hear from the beginning. Go ahead, the floor is yours.
Okay, thank you so much. Again, this discussion has been wonderful. The ideas that we've been able to raise have been varied. And, I mean, this was definitely a powerful discussion. But the Black Reality Think Tank is going to air every Saturday from 4 p.m. To 6 p.m. right here on Time for Awakening. .com, and we are looking forward to some very lively and powerful discussions. And it's not just talk for the sake of talking. We want to talk to work towards solutions. I want to speak to people who are change agents and people who are out here in the community working, trying to build some effective agendas to bring about change. That's who I'm after. That's my audience. I mean, and I want the general audience as well, but mainly I want folks who can put their hands on the plan and make it happen and make it work.
I think about that the movie that Jamie Foxx played in with Ray Charles. They had that quote in there that said, "Make it do what it do, baby." And that's really what we want to do here on the Black Hair Think
Tank. Go for it. Go for it.
That's it. And so, and this is a, and being in this community, being in the community of the Time for Awakening programming is exactly what we needed. We needed to bring and reach this audience already this evening. The folk that have called in, and I really appreciate them and thank them. I'm really enlightened to obviously be able to work with you, and I ask you to listen to us and call in with your advice and criticize. You know, my skin is thick. I don't have thin skin. So if you don't like something that we're saying, tell me about it. You know, I'm listening. I want to learn too. So it's not that, you know, we have all the answers. We, you know, we're here to dialogue, to make change, to make it happen. You know, we want to operate in the spirit of the Du Boises and the Garveys and the Malcolms and the Elijah Muhammad's and, you know, men who sat down with a master plan to make some things take place. And somehow the other, the masses lose focus of that. But we want to bring them back on track. That's our job, is to bring folks back on track and put it into place. So, Brother Elliot, thank you so much, my brother. I really appreciate you. The ancestors appreciate you, and so just hopefully that we can really make a difference when we do come on.
We'll be in touch soon.
Okay. Peace, my brother. Thank, the brother that was on with you again, what is his name? I'm sorry, what's his name?
Richard.
Brother Richard, yes. Take care, my brother.
Yes, you too now, sir.
We'll talk soon, Dr. Rodden.
I look forward to talking to you soon. Take right. care.
Peace. Richard, coming up on another program, I think it's going to be dynamic discussions, man, when the two brothers join us. Us Lifting Us had their national conference tonight, so their representatives couldn't be with us. But their show will be airing on Thursday nights, Us Lifting Us. Three dynamic new programs coming on Time for Awakening. A few more will be added in the month of October also. So we're trying to expand the dialogue, expand the reach, expand some alternatives. Brother Jay out of New York was talking about we need alternatives. Our people need to, and we can see that some of our people that have been looking towards the Democratic Party as some type of savior need other things. If they've been looking to this man to save black folks, then it's clear that our people need some other things to be put in front of them, some other alternatives. We're going to do our best to offer other alternatives, other people that nationally are doing things, not just talking, like Dr. Rogers says. It's some of our people that are out here doing things, but the masses of our people don't know about it because we don't have the media exposure. Some of the national media exposure that we have is laughing and joking 6 days a week, full of jokes and satires and Amos and Andy skits and all that type of stuff. We know what those programs, Steve Harvey, the Tom Joyners. Come on. You know, that's why a lot of our people don't know what's going on, Richard.
Yeah.
But we're going to utilize these programs and others to inform our people what's going on, inform them of organizations that they can get involved in, organizations that they can pattern themselves, start a group in your own community, or start things in your own community. So that's what we plan to do here. The struggle continues.
Sir.
Any last words before we leave tonight, Brother Richard?
No, I think we, enjoy, our dialogue tonight, and maybe every now and then we can get together and update each other in the same form. It might be continue to stimulate.
I think that would be good. Yeah, that's excellent. That's an excellent idea. Excellent. I want to thank everybody for listening to the program this evening. Lively discussion, as always, and we'll be back, Lord willing, on Sunday to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.
Peace. They
seem to be so unaware of. I know the thing that they'll soon have to take care of. We've got to do something, yeah, to save the children. Soon it will be their turn to try and save the world. Right now they seem to play such a small part of. And little Mary, she said she got to teach school. If we know all we say we know about the problem.
To save the children.